Blog Talk Radio.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? Yeah. Have I told you lately that you are wonderful? You're magnificent and so much more. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately you're my king? Have I told you lately that you are number one? You're magnificent and so much more.
So I stand in the presence of your glory.
Radio Land. This is Dr. Maxine Bryant, and welcome to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. We have an exciting show for you today, and I am just elated to be your host for this show. So this is brought to you by Gumbo for the Soul, which is a tribe family radio brand. So, and it's produced by Beverly Black, and we are just excited to be here this afternoon. We have a very exciting show. You just heard from my friend, the late and great Sheila Ray Charles, one of the children of the late Ray Charles, who passed last year. I always open the show with a song from Miss Sheila Ray Charles because she reminds us of two things. One, we do indeed have a relationship with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who loves us, and periodically we need to let him know that we love him right back. Thus, have I told you lately that I love you? Additionally, I like to open up with this show because the first segment, with that song, because the first segment is groove talk, and groove is defined as being rooted and grounded wherever we are. I use my relationship with the Lord to make sure that I'm rooted and grounded. Other people may utilize other things, but nevertheless, in order to move forward, in order to prosper, in order to enjoy success in life, I believe it takes us being solid, on solid ground. And that's extremely important. That was an extremely important part of Sheila's life, and I'd like to just kind of remind myself of that. So for the Groove Back segment this afternoon, we have none other than J. Elliot Howard. He is an author. He is an entrepreneur. He is well-versed in the areas of economics. He also has his own show. I'm going to let Elliot Howard introduce himself to you, and then you have the opportunity to eavesdrop on this conversation. Don't forget that if you want to ask questions or join in the conversation, please feel free. Call 347-539-5285. Again, that's 347-539-5285. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. I am glad to be part of the show, and to let all the listeners know a little of a sidebar, kind of like how small the world actually is. We're building our conversations offline when we're talking. That we're from mutual Midwest. We're in from the Midwestern neighborhood. Our states are side by side, and then on top of that, we share a mutual friend.
Okay.
Dr. Remus Wright, who was also here from in a great city of Indianapolis.
Right.
And so it was just one of those things that just put me on another high for the week leading up to this conversation here, and I am excited to be here with you, Dr. Bryant.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. How is the great Reverend Remus Wright doing?
He's doing well. His wife just celebrated his wife's birthday yesterday.
Okay.
And so, and you know, then, you know, they're just a beautiful family.
Yes.
So yes. So things are all well with him.
Great, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do. I understand you have a radio show also.
Yes, I do. I have a show called Millennial Money Management, and so on it we focus on, we think, you know, and really it's not just for millennials per se. I mean, it's full belief that if you are willing to learn, there's nothing that can stop you. So it doesn't really matter what age you are. You can always learn something. So, but we focus on money management issues from taxes, insurance, property, law, and but we break it into its finer components, because with all these life lessons, if you take it as a steak, you still have to cut that steak up into little pieces in order to eat it. So we break it up to the finer components so people can learn what to do with their personal money management matters. Along with that, I also work with Dr. Paul Denman down here in Houston with an organization called Man Alive. Man Alive is an organization that helps men develop their EQ. EQ is emotional intelligence. IQ is, you know, knowing how to run a radio broadcast, learning the finer components and executing. EQ is, okay, something happened in the course of the day that's causing your emotions to run amok. And so even though you know how to do something, your emotions are making it hard for you to even do it, or if you would do it at all.
Okay.
So with the guys, it's learning how to master those emotions. In fact, because acknowledging that a problem exists, but then giving a place to where to put them, because then you're no longer being run by them. I'm also a published author. I have a book out right now called Rewritten Lives. And it focuses on the cycle of the evolution of life that God takes us on. I mean, this whole process of there's a situation that occurs, and then we learn the whole process of the change that comes from that initial event. It could be anything, a death of a loved one or a promotion or you're moving. Pick one. But each stage of the book, there's about 8 chapters in the book, and it goes through the whole process of acknowledging that there's a need for a change, letting go, getting to know yourself, the battle within yourself, coming out of that battle from within, finding, rebuilding something new, finding what you're passionate about, and then realizing that it was all a means to an end. I mean, we go through stuff not for God to destroy us or anything like that, but to take away those things that we don't need and become exactly who we're supposed to be. And so poetry is like notes of that journey, because so the good thing about the book is that you can take each poem, read it individually, and that's great. But if you read from beginning to the end, there's an implicit storyline that carries you throughout the book. And then on the flip side, I also have worked from time to time with the prison ministry over at the Fountain of Praise, which is the Church of Love Mutual Friend Dr. Remus Wright, and I've worked some of the prison inmates in that, ministering to them as well.
Okay. Well, great. Well, you've given me at least 4 different things to kind of query you about. Let's start with what I'm calling millennial money, because of your background as it relates to finance, and you seem to have a passion towards helping people to direct their money. I once heard a phrase that John Ramsey uses, that we need to tell our money where to go instead of our money telling us what to do, right? And so what advice do you have, particularly for millennials who may be listening, in terms of learning or getting a handle of finances? What are some things that you would recommend for millennials to either think about or begin doing?
Well, first I would tell them, learn to wait and learn to plan, and then execute. The reason why I say learn to wait is, I mean, you don't know everybody's story, but you see everybody, see your fellow neighbors, fellow citizens around you, and they are different levels of at least as far as you can see with your eyes, certain levels of financial success. Whether or not you know the nitty-gritty, you're not going to know the story on everybody, but the thing is that whatever it is that they have, and if you want it, plan for it. If you haven't planned for it, but you just go and you spend the money, you end up having impacted yourself in such a way that you weren't prepared for.
How do you tell them to plan for it?
Learn the cost of the decision. Find out the cost. count the cost, and then look at where you are right now. Always know where you are financially. So because businesses do it all of the time. We call that auditing. At some point in the year, you get to find out exactly what you have sold, what you have brought in, what you have in your inventory, and so whatever moves that you need to make for your location, you can make that move. At least you know what the heck it's going to be, so because you can plan for that. But if businesses don't audit, they have no idea where their financial standing is. And some decisions are you can make right now, and some it might not be the right time. It's the right decision, but not right at the moment, because financially you're not in that position. So if businesses do that due diligence every year, then you can do that for yourself because you are your own business. Do you realize that in legally, corporations are viewed under the law as being citizens?
Say that again, corporations what now?
Are under the law are actually viewed as citizens. Corporations,
okay.
Under the law, right? So as and you think about it, you look at it, they have businesses have bank accounts. They pay taxes. They have benefits. Okay. Right, you know, we can go on right down the line, but that's what they do. Okay, well, you as your own private citizen, the things that the bigger citizens are doing, you can do for yourself.
Wow.
That way, then, at least you can begin to plan.
Okay, okay. So what do you say, though, to young people, and I've heard older people say this also, I don't even have enough money to budget or make a plan. I don't have money coming in.
Yeah,
like.
Do. First of all, that's the first lie. You have money, okay? You have this is in just in your head, and this is where the EQ side of this comes in, emotional intelligence side. Okay, in your head, there's this image that you're trying to grab a hold of, and you realize that you don't have, as it is right now, you don't have the money for that. So you tell yourself that you don't have any money. No, well, image in your head, you don't have that image as money. But you have the money that you have. You really, because you haven't done your personal audit, you don't know what you have. You don't know what's going in, what's coming out, okay? So you got to take control of you. The myth, because I had this discussion a while back with somebody, and I said, you know, it's like, you know, we don't have control. I said, no, that's a myth. You have control over you. You don't control other people, but you control what you do or do not do.
Right.
And so we have to have a point. You have to have a point to yourself where you take control of you. Your emotions are telling you that you want to have X, Y, and Z, and that you need to have it right now.
Yeah,
that's not good. I mean, you have that. You can, and to really have control of that is your knowledge that that's how you feel and that's what you want. Now you can take that energy that's being generated from that. And generate into planning because you got to A, find out what it costs to get there.
Mm.
And then look at where, and then find out where, then look at your finances, look at your bank account. Where's the money going? Are you spending money on things that you don't need? Because if we're trying to go, with what you're trying to get to, you need to make sure that whatever you're spending your money on right now that you don't need to be spending your money on, you cut that out because what you're trying to get to might not involve what you're doing right now.
Okay.
So go ahead and cut that out and then you stop and then. Automatically, you start seeing to have the money start to accumulate because the things that you don't need will go away. But you got to make that go away. You got to make that change and then stick with it and have that discipline.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
And see, from my back, explain my background. On top of all the stuff that I said at the beginning, I have an MBA in accounting.
Nice.
I have 10 years of operations management experience. When it comes to running my locations, generating a profit is what I did. And what I would do is I would have my budget, and I'll have my controllable costs and my non-controllable costs. And my non-controllable costs, from a business side of it, you know, it's the same thing that you would have for your house, that you're living, whether it's a house or your apartment or wherever that you're living. There's things that you have to have. You have to have some food. You don't have to have every type of food. You can't go down to some five-star restaurant, but you can have. You can grab if you want a steak, you can go down to the Kroger, grab you one, and go and then cook it on a skillet on your stove. That's what you got right now, okay? But you got to have your food, you got to have your electricity, you got to have your water. Those are your non-controllables. You have to have that. You have to have clothing.
Yeah.
You know, all right. And then you list your non-controllable things that you got to have. Then after you got through with your non-controllables, then you get your controllable costs, things that you could do without. If you didn't have it, it wouldn't be the end of the world. Because then you're setting yourself a tone of like, okay, what do I need this? Do I really need this? Whatever you really need, you actually need, that goes into your non-controllable, because no matter what, month in, month out, you have to have this on a monthly basis.
Right.
All right, so and from a business standpoint, I had to do that on that. So then I would get like 100% return. I would beat my profit budget by 100% year in and year out, because of the fact the stuff that I didn't need as a manager managing my location, I would just cut out. I would make certain moves or something like that and plug and go. But by planning, it enabled me to have record profits. So on a personal standpoint then, it's about like, okay, I want to be able to take my son to Cedar Point. I know you know because you're from Indianapolis.
I know Cedar Point.
Okay. But here's the thing. If I'm living in Findlay, where I'm originally from, and budgeting for Cedar Point is different than living in Houston and wanting to take my son to Findlay, to go take my son to Cedar Point, because I have to buy a plane ticket from Houston for the both of us, along with other things. Because I got to count the cost for that. Does he need to go to Cedar Point? No. It's a want. It's not a need. So it goes under a controllable expense. I don't have to have that right now. If I were to do it right now, I could do it. We'll be at the added expense of poor timing, inconveniencing my, you know, wife and other family to make this move, and then trying to put all my ducks in a row in a short period of time, which then would be more expensive and costly. If I were to wait, accumulate, cut out other expenses, maybe I don't need to go to the movies. Maybe I don't need to, I could go for the next quarter and not go out to eat. I just cook at home and take care of that. So that's cutting more costs, not more of my controllable costs, right? Because what I really want is this other controllable cost that will create a memory for the two of us. So things that I don't need in the short term, for the long term, I can do it for him, and then we have something that we can both share together, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's taking those little pieces of discipline. You know, they say in the Bible, it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. On the other side of the coin, the reverse is that little areas of saving and fertilizer, so to speak, will grow a grapevine, actually.
Okay.
So this is how you do that. It's having that discipline to plan, which again is an EQ issue. In fact, when I had an interview with Stephen Hutchinson, we talked about emotional intelligence, how it affects finance, and emotional intelligence has a big issue on that, because a lot of times we're sitting there wanting something because of the fact that we see somebody else having it.
Right.
And so the thing is that the Joneses, we all know about the Joneses. The thing is, the Joneses don't care about you. The Joneses don't care. You are not. They woke up in the morning, they went to bed at night. They don't care about you. they're doing them. So then why don't you just do you?
Okay.
They know where they are and what they have to do, what they're doing with their money. You don't know if they're making right financial decisions. You just got the image in front of you of what their appearance that they're casting off. But you know where you are. You know what you're doing, and you should know where your money is.
Okay. I got one question for you, and then we're going to go to commercial. If you had $10,000 kind of free and clear, it was sitting in the bank, what would you do with that money?
Okay. $10,000 in the bank, free and clear. I would make sure that I earmark certain funds for my wife and my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then see, is there anything, because I make sure that all my needs are taken care of.
Yep, all needs are taken care of.
All my needs are taken care of. So there's nothing else. It's just, what do I want to do with this that's $10,000 left over?
Right.
I would make sure that I put a good bulk of it into an investment. Or if you put it in some bank accounts, you'll start getting savings on that right off the bat.
Right.
And so I'd have that, collect the interest, and see if there's any way I can double my investment if necessary, if I can do that, and then you know, rest for a rainy day because you never know when something might happen.
Right. That was just a curiosity question. So let's stop here. We're going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back. We are talking to Elliot Howard on the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. So we'll take a commercial, and we'll be right back.
Motivational, educational, informative, inspirational, relevant, knowledgeable, nationally, internationally. These are the words seminar participants have used to describe this dynamic presenter. Topics as non-threatening as customer service. Topics as delicate as race relations, diversity, and inclusion. Dr. Maxine Bryant has repeatedly captured the hearts and minds of many audiences. Dr. Bryant's expertise has assisted private industry and nonprofit businesses as they move forward to realize their desired goals. Call Pat Maltz at 612-876-7964. Book Dr. Bryant. Take your workforce to the next level.
Hey, Mr. Elliot Howard. Again, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. This is brought to you by Tribe Family Channel, which is a gumbo for the soul international family brand that was created by Beverly Black. I am your host, Dr. Maxine Bryant, and we are talking to Mr. Elliot Howard about money matters. And certainly in this segment of the show, the Groove Talk, groove is being rooted and grounded, knowing where you are, knowing where you're going, having a plan. And today we're talking about the financial plan. Mr. Howard, prior to the commercial, earlier on, you talked a little bit about EQ and IQ, and I think there is a definite connection, and you hinted on it. There's a connection between money and our emotional attachment to money. Can you talk a little bit about that as it relates to EQ and IQ? Like, I may have an IQ and be able to know that I should not do ABC with my money, but because it's got an emotional attachment to me, I may make some really wrong decisions. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, see, because the IQ, we know how to balance. We know we have to balance the budget. Knowing how to balance the budget is an IQ issue. Knowing that you need to count the cost of the product or the purchasing of a house or whatever, you know, or whatever type of vacation, that's a IQ issue. But having the discipline to, you know, that you only have maybe $12,000 in the bank. But what you're trying to purchase is something, let's say like a vehicle that's $20,000. The current vehicle that you have is perfectly okay, and if you and as long as you maintenance it on a regular basis, which just takes a discipline, all right, it might only cost like a couple hundred bucks a year to maintain it because you only have $12,000 in the bank. If you do take that loan and for a 20, you involve making the purchase for that car, then you, when the reason why, and you got to ask yourself, why is it that I want this car? Is because that I went to church one day on a particular Sunday, and Susan, my friend, you know, had her new Lincoln Continental, and it looked sharp, and I saw her driving it, and she looked so good in it, and I, you know what, I can see myself driving a car like that. Let me go ahead and go down to the Lincoln dealership and make the purchase of a Lincoln Continental. Okay. All right, so you have no idea what state she, Susan was in when she made the purchase of the vehicle. She's never really discussed with you her finances. And for all you know, the Lincoln Continental might have been a gift from her family to her, and she might not have purchased it at all because she didn't have the money.
Okay.
But you don't know any of those things. Everybody has their own particular story. But you know that the car is a $35,000 vehicle. That's what you did. So you go and look up, so you know it's a $35,000 vehicle. The current vehicle that you have is perfectly okay. There's no scratches, no dings. You've maintained it well over the time. It's, you have about 70,000 miles on it. It looks like it can run another 70,000 miles on it. All right? And, okay, so then you sit there and you know that the type of salary that you might be in, where your revenue is coming in from your jobs and anything else that you have going in, you're still, even if you save for it, maybe at the end of the year, you might be in a position with what you have, you know, with what you have in the bank already saved, that you can make a good down payment for the vehicle. And so when you got, if you were to have to get a loan, it wouldn't be a high interest, and your payments wouldn't be so high. But if you were to make the purchase right now, you would be in a bad place financially, because it would take all of the you might only have like $12,000 to $15,000 in the bank. It might take all of your $15,000 in the bank, so you have zero in there, plus whatever you have to pay on for a loan.
Okay.
All right, and but that's if you did it right now. If you waited or did all these other decisions, that other things, that way you're not putting yourself in a bad situation financially in order to have it, then you're good. But if you do a knee jerk and just do it, might not be a good decision on that. And
that,
so, go ahead.
Come on.
And so that is, therein lies the issue of EQ, because EQ really helps you in developing it. It's like, okay, so why is it that I feel this way? Why do I want to do this? Why? It's like, you know, instead of just I'm see it and I'm going to do it. No, ask yourself why. Can't I control myself? Why can't I control it? Like, I don't have to have this right now. Or you actually could do it. You probably need on the flip side of it, because I don't want to just focus on the negative. Could be on the positive that, you know, you could do it. And you're holding, and the reason why you're not doing it and living up to whatever potential you actually could be able to do is because past fears and fear of loss, when the fact is, again, this is why you need to know what's going on in your bank account, understand what you have coming in, and understand your costs and the non-controllables and your controllables. It's like, you know what? I can do this. I don't have to be in – there's no bondage here.
Wow.
So if I want to go ahead and make this purchase – I'm completely fine with doing it, and I'm doing it because of the fact that I want to do it. I'm in a good financial position to do it, and this would definitely be a better situation than what I have right now with my car. Because there are some people that are doing well financially, and people, you don't have to do anything. You can purchase or not purchase. These are just examples,
right?
But, you know, but their car is on their last. Seriously, a priest can come in and put the car on last rites. But they want to go ahead and keep on. The bolt's about to come off. Every tire is getting completely shredded, and the engine is like, you know, you need to put some oxygen on it, all right? You need Jesus to walk a miracle, I'm telling you, right? But they don't have to. But Jesus is sitting there saying, pick up your bed and walk. Right over there, there's a deal I got waiting for you, and all you got to do is you got that better one, because you've done the things diligently to put yourself in a position that you can make this. You work hard. You're diligent in your and frugal, you're prudent, and as a result, you're in a position of all the right decisions that you have made to go ahead and get something better for yourself.
All right.
So don't have to hold yourself back.
So let me ask you this. Let me jump in and ask you this. This is a question that many Christians wrestle with. I've heard many people wrestle with this. It's like, I barely make enough, my take-home pay, to live off of, to pay my bills. I cannot afford to tithe, and so I don't. What are your thoughts?
I don't agree with not tithing. Here's the thing. Okay, so my rationale that I bring to you. Okay, so you're saying that the reason why you tithe is because you barely make enough to get by on. Okay,
right.
If you really take a hard look at this, is going back and looking at your expenses. How much money are you spending on these controllable expenses, things that you really could do without? Because I'm telling you, bookkeeping is an eye-opener. I'm not even saying you got to be an accountant. You just got to bookkeep yourself. Eye-opener, going to find out, like, you know, you went to McDonald's, you know, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 5 days out of the week. But you know, so that's like, you know, $6-$7 each time for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, multiply that 3 times for 5 days during the week, right? Or some people do this every day, and then you're looking at, all right, so you're doing that plus you're spending money on groceries. Well, if you're spending money on groceries and you're eating out all the time, that's where it's not just one area where you're completely jacking yourself with your finances. the money's there to tithe. It's just that really you shouldn't. We all know it's not really healthy to be eating McDonald's 3 times a week,
seven days a week.
You're supposed to take care of the temple that God gave you anyway, so that's already an issue right there. My point is the fact is, in some instances people are having issues with doing double spending. There's a redundancy, and so you need to get rid of that redundancy.
Okay.
And tithing helps set that discipline where the fact is, okay, this is something that I should do, and you have that. It's just 10% of the
right.
revenue that you have coming into the house.
Right.
You probably spend more than that going on some of these other things that you're doing during the course of the week. And here's the thing. I will say you can't be God's giving, because if you do tithe,
all right.
God's going to come back. God's going to come back with it.
Absolutely.
For you. I will tell you this. See, here's the thing. I'm an individual. See, when I graduated from college, my first master's degree, I was a bad situation in Northwest Ohio, because even when the economics in the rest of the U.S. were great, it was bad there. I couldn't find anything, all right? But I did tithe what I did have. This is what God did for me, okay? I'm sitting there, and I remember I was going to the temp agency to go pick up the check. It had been a snowstorm, so they put the checks in this mailbox outside so everybody could come out and get their checks because it was a snowstorm. Well, I go. Can you imagine the despair? I go there, and the mailbox had been ripped open, and the checks had been spread out everywhere, and my check was gone, and I needed the money, right? And
okay.
I was like, and I was on the last dime. It was it. And I'm walking, dear God, I ain't got nothing. A couple hours later, a phone call rings, and I was like, are you Jerry Howard? I'm like, Jerry's my first name, and that's what showed up on my check. I was like, yeah. He said, well, I went to the temp agency to pick up my check, and I found your check on the ground. And I tried to find this. I had to look in the phone book. Listen, but I have your check. Can I meet you somewhere and give it to you?
Look at God. Look at
exactly.
God. Awesome.
Okay.
Wait a minute, because we're out of time.
I forgot the good note.
Awesome,
we say this all the time in church. Won't he do it? That was 16 years ago. I still remember it.
Okay. That is awesome, and you're still being blessed. Amen. Tell the listening audience real quick when they can tune in to your show.
Okay, every Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, on Thursday nights. And I'm part of the Tribe Family Channel, Government for the Soul International. And you go there, and the name of the show is Millennial Money Management, 7:30 p.m. every Thursday.
Awesome. We have been talking with Jay Elliott Howard about money management, particularly as it relates to staying in your groove. Thank you very much, sir. We are going to have you on another time. Ladies and gentlemen, as we move from one segment to the other, we're going to have a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with the great Deanna Hoskins. I'm so excited about this. So we're going to hear a commercial, and then the next interview will be with Deanna Hoskins. J. L. A. Howard, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Have you been frozen in fear, stuck on stupid, lost in love, tormented with troubling relationships, felt disconnected, discombobulated, and dismissed? Has parenting ever felt more like a burden than a blessing? Have you questioned your own sanity, doubted your own self-worth, wish you were someone else somewhere else? Do you ever feel you're not good enough, not pretty enough, not smart enough, not talented enough, unworthy, unlovable, undeserving? Then you know what it feels like to be out of your groove. The Groove Doctor has just the right prescription. Get your copy of Dr. Maxine Vine's book, I Want My Groove Back God's Way. Begin your journey today living in real groove. Dr. Maxine Brown uses her own experiences and spiritual insights to guide the reader to a place of real groove. by helping readers attain a holistic state of groove based on Bible principles. Go to www.mygrooveback.com to order your copy today. $10 plus shipping costs. You will be glad you did.
Deanna Hoskins.
Yes, ma'am.
Gotta wait for the music to stop. All right, Deanna Hoskins, all the way from the great Washington, D.C. My goodness,
yes.
Lady. I have watched your journey. Let me tell the audience a little bit about how I've known you. So, I met you in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
You were part of the Mayor's Commission on Reentry. I was the director of reentry for the mayor's office. You were a part of our team. Then the Lord moved you to Ohio, and
yes.
Then most recently moved you to D.C. And so let's tell the audience a little bit about your background. You have a felony, am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, sure. In 1998, I coincidentally convicted of a felony theft in Hamilton County in Cincinnati, Ohio, which was a direct relation of a substance abuse issue that I had at the time. Suffered with a crack addiction for over 10 years. It ultimately lost custody of my children, sentenced to serve time in a correctional facility in Hamilton County, one of the first 50 women when the correctional facility opened. To just get my life together. And I share with everybody that at that time, my only goal, my only prayer was, God, please take away this bondage of addiction that has taken over my life, that has caused chaos. During the midst of that, I, of course, was released, had to do aftercare, drop urines, on probation. Ultimately, my kids were able to come back home. And I just started to build a life one day at a time. Ultimately, returning to school, college, to get my associate's degree, finished my associate's, went on to get my bachelor's in social work, ultimately getting my master's in criminal justice. But I always wanted to focus on social work in the area of criminal justice, because one of the things that I found out was that when I was going through that journey, there weren't a lot of people who had experienced what I experienced able to guide me as a counselor. I felt I had this drug addiction problem, and yes, I had addiction counselors, but nobody could talk about my criminal behavior and how to navigate society now that I had this mark. My employability went down. The areas I used to work, I could no longer work. So I just started to build an expertise level in the criminal justice arena around employment, voting rights, everything related to an individual who had a criminal background. My ultimate goal was to just provide hope that if I can do this, anybody can do this.
Absolutely. And I have been a cheerleader on the sidelines, and I am so excited for you. So I got a whole lot of questions, but let's tell the audience where you are now.
I am currently employed with the United States Department of Justice as a senior policy advisor over corrections and reentry. I manage the Second Chance portfolio of funding that is authorized by legislation. I create the solicitations, have the ideas, select the grantees, and I review various solicitations that come in as well. And I also manage what is known as the National Reentry Resource Center, ran by the Council of State Government out of New York City.
Ladies and gentlemen, did you hear that? Did you hear that? All of you all who work for nonprofits, who want to do work for ex-offenders, you need to know Deanna Hoskins, because you probably want to submit a grant for the Second Chance dollars. This is the lady.
Yes.
This is the lady. This is the lady. Oh, my goodness. You went from having a felony to setting policy and deciding on programs that get funded that help people with criminal histories. My Lord, is there a God or is there a God?
All I say, won't he do it? You know, it serves two realms, because there's this struggle in the field of people who have felony convictions about getting employment, And I have been very blessed to have, with a felony conviction, work on all three levels of government in Indianapolis, working for the governor's office, on a state level, worked for the Indiana Department of Corrections with a felony conviction, went on to Cincinnati to work with the county commissioners, elected officials, and the mayor, so working in local government, and now on a federal, and being in a leadership position in all of those entities, what it also states is, yeah, there are barriers and there are people who are hesitant, but when you position yourself with your purpose, and it lines up, I don't care what the policies say.
Okay.
And I experienced that in Indiana when I went to work for the Department of Corrections. After I was hired, I was in training, and they had to do fingerprints. And I put it on my application. I exposed it during my interview. And I told the guy, I said, I'm convicted. I have a felony conviction. And he said, you can't work for a Department of Corrections with a felony conviction. I said, well, I didn't lie. Everybody knew. So I remember him saying he had to make a phone call. And I went outside, I prayed, I was like, okay, God, I've moved to Indiana with kids for this job. And he came back and he said, in my 32 years of working for the state of Indiana, I have never seen this, but the governor signed off on you. So I tell people, don't tell me what policy says. I'll tell you when you're meant to be somewhere, policy don't matter.
All right. All right. So listen, Deanna, I know that your expertise and your work experience right now has to do with second chance programs and all of that. But I got a question for you regarding voting, because that's something that's near and dear to my heart. And that is removing the barrier, the collateral consequence of being unable to vote if you have a felony. What's going on nationally? I know different states have different policies. I know in Indiana you can vote as soon as you get out, even if you're on paper. In Georgia, you have to be off paper. There are some states that, like Florida, I believe, you still have to petition the governor to be able to vote. What can we do about that aspect of having a felony?
So, like you said, there are various things. Every state has their own rules and guidelines. In the states where you are free to vote once you are released, the biggest barrier is the myth of people with felonies thinking they can't vote. So even in those states, in Ohio was one of those states that once you were released, the only time you lost your privilege to vote in Ohio was when you were a ward of the state. So even sitting in a county jail, not being convicted, you have a right to submit an absentee ballot. You have not lost your citizenship because you have not been convicted of a crime.
Okay.
In states such as Georgia, as you said, once you get off parole. But I push for advocates. I know there's an initiative out of Atlanta working with some women, Women on the Rise, that were ran by Marilyn Wynn, who is formerly incarcerated herself. They're pushing those different initiatives to roll back some of that legislative some of those laws. And when I tell people, those are not federal laws, those are state laws. So your state representatives that you vote in have the ability to remove that barrier. And of course, Florida is one of them places that once you have a felony, you lose the right to vote. So there's a big initiative going on in Florida with the ACLU Smart Justice around voting rights and regulations of that thing, of that nature. And some states is coming down to, we're going to flip the house because we're tired of being on a back burner. Formerly incarcerated people are stepping up to the plate to say, look, I'm a citizen, I pay taxes, but I can't vote. So those different things are playing a part in it. And what I tell people is, whatever the law is in your state, start building a base of formerly incarcerated, because with over 2.6 million people having a criminal background, if you build a voter base of formerly incarcerated like other groups do, like the unions do, will be heard.
What I'm experiencing here, Deanna, is a significant difficulty in doing that. I know enough people with criminal histories here, formerly incarcerated individuals in Savannah, where we could have a block of people. Remember MOVE in Indianapolis?
Yes.
And I'm sure you're familiar with All of Us or None out in California.
Yes.
I'm a proponent of people with criminal history joining together, advocating for themselves, changing laws, going to the Capitol of their states and advocating for changes that are going to benefit them. It has been so very difficult for me to even get 10. And I have, suggestions.
One of the things that I tell people is you have to remember, normally, traditionally, especially communities of black or brown color who have been disproportionately disenfranchised.
Yes.
We are not going to walk into a situation where we want to deal with a system that has always oppressed us in some manner. So
right.
there's a strategy of building trust and building the center of a reentry coalition, but letting it be ran and maneuvered by formerly incarcerated people. So once we get off the line, I definitely can connect you with some women that's doing some awesome work in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're finding out is, and I speak to this because I'm a part of All of Us or None, the formerly incarcerated people, convicted people's movement, Just Leadership USA. One of the things that we have realized is we've always waited on somebody to save us, and because they don't have our experience, although their saving is good, but they don't understand the intricate, intimate, the trauma associated with incarceration. I tell everybody, if you can't tell me about that first night of being locked up, we really can't have a conversation because that's a traumatic experience within itself. But when you're able to sit down with somebody and talk through that somebody can relate to that trauma, that somebody can relate to the trauma that led up to your addiction or that led up to your incarceration, it becomes a different type of thing, and you start to build power within that community because it does become a community. But you
absolutely
have to start very slow in building trust.
Absolutely. And I recognize I don't have that background, so I have identified two people in particular here in Savannah, and I was going to kind of lead from behind and help, encourage them and empower them to go and rally and identify others like themselves. Couldn't do it. But when we get offline, I mean, it just didn't happen. I'm not going to say they couldn't do it.
Right.
But when we get offline, I definitely want to talk more about that. But so tell us about the Second Chance programs that you are a senior policy, senior policy advisor to. What are some things that you can tell not-for-profits out there that may be interested in learning how to go about applying or putting grant applications in?
Well, one of the things that I realized when I got to the federal government is the federal government doesn't fund nonprofits broadly. So the majority of Second Chance funding goes to states and local jurisdictions.
And cities. I forgot about that. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. State Department of Corrections to address. He has one Second Chance Act. It's called our Community Mentoring and Reentry that is open to nonprofits. It's actually an open solicitation that's out right now. I believe it closes May 1st. But what I also tell people is if you really want to know what's going on in the funding world around reentry, because everybody focuses on Second Chance, but we partner across the federal government, and I learned this coming to the federal government from the ground. The Department of Labor has major reentry grants, Health and Human Services, Small Business Association, the Department of Agriculture that does food stamps. They're doing a farming initiative for this population, the reentry population. So if people would go to the National Reentry Resource Center and register for the newsletter, they keep track of all the funding that's come out. They email blast it. And on top of that, we have just created webinars for people to understand how to apply for grants. So we have four webinars coming up. I believe the first one is next week. If they go to the National Reentry Resource Center, they'll get all this information. But these webinars are going to focus on, when you're looking at a solicitation, what is a statement of a problem? What should you include in there? What type of data should you include in there? When you do a budget, how should you break a budget out? And we have literally taken experts from the field who actually write award-winning solicitations and they win them every time they get them, and they are doing these webinars. And this, although they're going to focus on federal solicitations, this is information you can use if you're applying for grants anywhere. You need to know, how do I tell my story? How do I tell my story that it's impactful, it's based on fact, and it plays to whoever is reading it or reviewing it hard.
Absolutely.
That is getting to the purpose, but that I am getting to the goal of what I am trying to propose, and they should give me money to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I used to have, when I first moved to Savannah, I put on a couple of Grant Writing 101. That was what I called it.
Yes.
Just that, you know, just the basics, because so many people want to jump from I have an idea to now apply for a grant. No, there's a whole lot in between there.
Exactly.
You've got to have a track record. So remember that, people. You got to already have a track record. So, Deanna, when you first you did prison. Did you do prison time?
I actually did. It's called community-based corrections.
Okay.
It was my I call it the pit stop before prison, where they were giving you the opportunity. You can go here and do this time.
Okay.
And if you mess up, you have to go to prison to fulfill this whole sentence. But I tell people, once I started working inside of prison, they gave me a community prison sentence is what they gave me, because the same regulations applied to me as well. I just wasn't with 500 people. I was with 200 people.
Okay. Okay. So when you finished that bit, what were some obstacles that you yourself faced reentering back into society?
Well, one of it was, for me, was I was no prior to going to jail or being convicted of a felony. And I tell people, it wasn't so much the sentence that causes the damage, it's the felony conviction. So we have to remember, some people go to prison based on whatever their crime is. Some people get probation, but we're all in the same boat together because it's the felony conviction.
Absolutely.
That society looks at. But prior to getting that conviction, I was into data entry. I could work in banks. That's when they were still processing checks before all this automation. I could go into any corporation and do their 10 key. But once I had that felony conviction for that was off the table. I was no longer able to be employed in an area where I was good at and what I thought I knew how to do. So I remember saying, God, what do I do? I have this skill set that I even earned in high school. I took a vocational class in high school. I got this certification. I've done this all these years. What do I do at this time? And I remember just applying. I was in recovery myself, and the treatment center needed an admissions clerk, which was clerical, entering data entry into the system. And once I went to work at that treatment center, it was the doors just opened for me, because I was starting to be in my lane of being of service to others. And what I also tell people, you know, it's 19 years. I just celebrated my 19 years yesterday.
Of being clean?
My felony, 19
years. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. But it's crazy because with all the, you know, education I've obtained, working for county officials, state officials, and now federal officials, when I relocate and I am a homeowner in Ohio, I was able to buy a home that I have been renting out as my landlord. When I move to another state and I apply for housing through a management company, I still get turned down based on my criminal record. I've just learned how to laugh it off now. But it reaffirms why I do what I do and why I fight, because here it is 20 years later, I'm a homeowner, I've worked on all levels of government, I'm in a leadership position in the federal government, and you're not going to allow me to rent your apartment. No evictions, none of that would stop me. Great credit score, but because I have a 19-year-old conviction of theft, I still get turned down. And I have to strategically, when I move somewhere, I have to strategically rent from private owners, and I expose my background to them and my history, but I still struggle with going through management companies. So to this day, if I'm struggling at 19 years up, 19 years later, can you imagine somebody who's doing 19 months later?
Wow.
And to be housing, to be in a situation where you can't get housing, you can't get employment, you can't get – we almost push people back into a survival mode of crime, because I'm going to tell you, and I tell supervisors this, I tell leadership this all the time. If you tell me I can't feed my kids, I can't find a place to lay their head, mm-hmm. I can't tell you I ain't going to do what I need to do to take care of my baby.
Right.
That's just what we do as human nature.
Right.
So I
always
ask the question, especially to local government, to state government, do we have laws in place in this state or in this jurisdiction that push people back into a survival mode of crime? What
and
is
we
your
do.
Housing policy?
Yeah,
and we do. When I got to Ohio, we started changing policies because the public housing, most people think it's the federal government. They only prevent two charges from not living in public housing, a lifetime sex offender who has to register and someone who has manufactured methamphetamine while living public housing. The rest of those rules are locally implemented.
Right.
So
right. And listen, Deanna, here in Savannah and in other states too, I understand, we have what's called crime-free zones. And they are apartment complexes and even private homeowners who are encouraged to be on this list that will not allow felons and some misdemeanors. You have to be out at least 10 years if you had a felony and at least 5 years for a misdemeanor before you can be eligible to be considered to live in those housing developments. And this is just, this is not public housing, they're included, but it's private apartment complexes or landlords that are encouraged to become a part of this. And the thing is, they want to be able to say that this reduces crime in that area. You can feel safe if you live in a crime-free zone. And I speak publicly against this. And when I'm in my classes, I tell my students, you know, this is something that is, it sounds good to the ears, but it is so, one, discriminatory, but two, it is so perilous for people who have criminal histories.
And one of the things we have realized is it's what you're identifying as a crime. What are you identifying when you tell me it's safe to live here because I'm in a crime-free zone? Are you saying more violent crimes don't happen here? Or was violent crimes even happening there at one time? But what you're witnessing in Georgia with that type of rule or encouragement to be part of this group that says these, you're experiencing a new Jim Crow. Experiencing where people are utilizing a criminal background to block people as blacks were blocked back in slavery. We've just found a new way to still limit and identify who we want to live at our apartments. And until we stand up, bring in the NAACP, I don't know if you guys have a housing opportunities made equal for discriminatory practices. I tell people, although it wasn't housing, Mercedes-Benz, Family Dollar, BMW, have all paid out of pocket for having a blanket policy. You can ex-offenders are not a protected class, but there is a clause in the Title 20, the Civil Rights Act, that says you cannot discriminate against a disparate population. And when you have blank policies, it automatically discriminates against African Americans and Latinos who are arrested and convicted at a higher rate than any other population. So if there's an investigation that says that they are renting to people because what happened, certain people with a criminal background will be allowed in while others won't.
Okay.
There is not going to be a blanket policy. There's going to be certain people who, we'll give you a chance, but we're not going to give
point.
You a chance. Until we have to start shutting that down and exposing it for what it is. But again, that's where those reentry coalitions come in, formerly incarcerated people. And I want your listeners to know that one of the things that we say about people who have a criminal background, that those closest to the problem are closest to the solution, but furthest from resource and power. We have to take our resource and our power back, because you can't talk about us without us anymore. We have to sit at the table. Not only are we sitting at the table, we have to be in leadership positions to lead this initiative for change, because change is always going to benefit the person who don't need it the most when they're leading it. So if I'm the person who needs it the most, I need to be leading the change in this area.
Absolutely. Deanna, it has been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. We have less than 1 minute on the show. This is Dr. Maxine Bryant on the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show, brought to you by Tribe Family Channel. It's a gumbo for the soul international family brand created by Beverly Black. And this is your host, Dr. Maxine Bryant. Tune in. And our next show, which will be 2 weeks from now, and you will hear another riveting conversation. The next show is April the 9th at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Miss Deanna Hoskins, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? Yeah. Have I told you lately that you are wonderful? You're magnificent and so much more. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately you're my king? Have I told you lately that you are number one? You're magnificent.